partnership with AndTheValleyShook.com. It's the Ghost Show, your original LSU podcast, coming to you on a Tuesday night. It's January 4th, 2011. Happy New Year to everybody out there. I'm your host, Big Wee, Kerry Muntz in the saddle, representing. If you want to get in touch with us, ways to get in touch with the Ghost Show, as always, you can email us, ghostshow@gmail.com. That's GEAUXSHOW@gmail.com. You can also visit the site we are part of, AndTheValleyShook.com, the number one LSU sports blog out there, part of SB Nation Blogs. Way to get to that is it's AndTheValleyShook.com. And you can go to the website, and on the left-hand side is a PodTrack player. You can listen to the shows from there, and also you can download us to your iPod from iTunes for free. And also go to Facebook and become our friend as well. On that, you can go that route as well.
Or you can go to Facebook and hate us. Either way, it works.
Yeah, you could do that. You could go that route and pretend to like us, but a lot of people hate us these days. But that's another story for another day. As we watch Arkansas not fall behind 14-7 to Ohio State. But like I stated, this is the Go Show, part of AndTheValleyShook.com. A lot of things to talk about. Of course, we are a mere 5 days away from, 4 days away actually, from LSU and Texas A&M Cotton Bowl, January 7th in Jerry's World. We have two guests from A&M tonight, so I will let those two guys introduce themselves, and I'll start with the guy on the left.
All right, I guess.
Yes, that's me.
Host of IamTheTwelfthMan.com, Texas A&M's premier sports blog nation blog. This would be a typical Aggie thing. I may be the guy on the right here, but that's okay. We would get confused, right? Left and right. Ha. Anyway, glad to be here. Glad to be playing y'all in the game. I was there last time we played y'all in 95, so thrilled to be here on your show. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, no problem. I just thought I'd throw a little funny curveball at y'all real quick. And, of course, with me tonight, as always, Mr. Patrick Morris in Ponchatoula, Louisiana. What's going on with that?
Not much at all. Just getting ready for a good one. Going to break in the new house there.
That's right. I can't think of a better way to do it than opening up with a game in your house that, for a good 9 years was LSU's chief non-conference rival in Texas A&M. You went to we opened up, I think we started playing them in 86. 85 or 86 was the first time I remember watching them play. And LSU won the first two games, I think, and then we went through some bad years with Holman. And I can't remember, I think after 89, I don't think we had beaten A&M since, until the series ended. So, but everybody on both sides is really excited about this matchup. And I think a lot of people are waiting, kind of hoping this maybe, could turn into another home and home again, because it's
like we said, we would trade Arkansas for A&M if y'all ever want to make that trade.
Yeah, we could do that. I'm open to it. So, real some things to get into before we get into breaking down the game, Patrick. Of course, the news came out that it was rumored yesterday that Ridley was going to be reinstated. It became official today. Stephen Ridley will be eligible to play in the Cotton Bowl on Friday night. So that is that's good news for LSU on a lot of different points, because he's the leading ball carrier, number one running back.
Most consistent player LSU had, basically,
right,
this year.
On offense, yes. Most consistent player on offense, without question. So
What I'd like to know is, does anybody have any beat on exactly what the academic violation was?
I'll turn it over to Podcat on that one.
I heard rumors, but I can't go into that. Yeah,
supposedly
it was some teacher who's getting canned was basically lashing out, accused a whole bunch of athletes in a class of cheating. And although the university decided there was nothing to it, the teacher went directly to the NCAA, and then they immediately ruled him ineligible until they could investigate it. So, yeah, it's just a bunch of BS, but it happens.
Who hasn't done that in a class at LSU? I mean, come on.
I've cheated.
Well,
what I love about that, hearing that story, is here you got a professor who goes to the NCAA and says, hey, this happened. And they're like, oh, suspend this guy. Okay? Cam freaking Newton is, his dad's out there selling to everybody. But what does he miss? One day of practice that he's suspended for? I mean,
no, agreed.
I love
totally.
The consistency of the NCAA. I don't want to get a rant on the Cam Newton deal, but seriously, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, sorry. I'm happy we're at least playing for y'all. I really am, because the chances I've gotten to see you all this year, I like what I saw from him. So, and I want y'all to be at full strength when we play y'all, because I think it's going to be an epic battle. I think we're going to – I have a feeling this game's going to come down to a defensive struggle. I don't want to – I mean, I know we're going to break this thing down, but –
Well, let's hope
the running game is going to be very important for both teams. So I want to see really out there.
Let's hope it doesn't come to coaching.
Yeah, well,
because if it comes down to coaching at the end of the game with our offensive coordinator, we may be in some serious trouble.
So, yes, very, 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 very true. So, but no, I'm glad to see LSU being at full strength. I don't want not that I would make excuses if he didn't play, but it's just better that he's eligible and everybody that should be playing is playing, and there could be any kind of things going on, as far as, we only, suffered because he didn't play, which is, completely ridiculous because everybody knows our offense sucks even literally in a game. So it's, but having him there just makes it a little bit more better. But onto the bigger news that I don't know if it will affect LSU, and Pat, I want to get your opinion. But we all know Rich Rodriguez was fired from Michigan today. We kind of put a hand right on the wall.
Not officially.
No, not officially.
Yet.
I don't care.
Nope.
It was as soon as Mississippi State laid a 38-point beatdown on them, it was pretty much going to happen. So,
yeah.
But now the talk. Of course, the talk is they're going after. They got Michigan has their eyeballs on Jim Harbaugh. Well, everything out of Harbaugh's camp, everything out of Harbaugh's campus, he's either staying at Stanford or he's going to the NFL. He's not going to another college job. He's moving up to the professional ranks, which. Of course, leads it right back into do they come after Les Miles and what do they offer him? Les Miles is making what 3.4 right now million at LSU a year.
Right.
Is Michigan willing to come out and pay Les Miles that much? I don't think Les Miles is gonna give them a discount and leave for $2 million a year. So, Pat, what do you think is gonna transpire out of this?
Well, first of all, I don't think you're absolutely right on Harbaugh. I mean it. Even his brother's coming out and saying, look, it's either going to be NFL, but Michigan's kind of a done deal, not going to happen. And another thing, why would you go to Michigan whenever you could sit there forever at Stanford in the beautiful weather out there and do your thing? And be the king, Michigan with that pressure, you're going to have the boosters on your butt all the time. He's got a cushy job out there. They'll pay him more money if he wants to stay anyway. Or, he hits the NFL where he probably really wants to be anyway because that's where he came through. That's what his brother's doing, it's always going to be a sibling rivalry there. So I would say he's going NFL. Les Miles, they also say they got their eye on that San Diego State coach, I want to say it is.
Yeah, I can't remember the guy's name. But
yeah,
Brady Hoke.
Okay. And so, they say he's a Michigan man. They could get him for a lot less money, no doubt. But at the same time, Michigan's got to get somebody in there with some kind of stability. I mean, they can't be building a program. They got to take a program and go there. They're the school, they're lagging behind quick, the Ohio States of the world and the other schools in the Big Ten that came up this year, even though they suck in bowl games. But they really have to get somebody that's steady, that's a player's coach for one thing, because the players did not like playing for Rodriguez, obviously, from the first year whenever they didn't agree with the practices and all that other stuff. So I'd say, yeah, you're going to have the boosters out there. It's going to be like any major college job. Half the boosters are going to want this guy. The other half is going to want that guy. Who's got more money and who's more interested in the job?
Okay.
But I think Les Miles could go. I mean, I think I would say if I gave odds, I'd say 60% he stays, 40% he goes. Simply because he's been entrenched in his job so long down here that his family is now part of the community. And you got to admit, living down here is not a bad scenario. The weather's nice most of the time, except when it hits 100 during the summertime. The people down there, you can't argue with the people down here. When you win, they're on your side. Of course, when you lose, they can throw stones at your house. But only we get to make fun of our own coach. Put it that way. We'll defend you to the kilter. So I think it's 40-60 right now.
Yeah, I'm with you on that a lot because the amount of money he's already making here. I don't see Michigan, I think 3 years ago they would have offered him that kind of money, but the whole Les Miles kind of aura has kind of left it kind of came back a little bit this year, and you know, some of the things that he did, you know, he's almost just a cartoon character to a lot of people now. So plus there's a huge buyout as well. So what I think Michigan's probably going to go the route of somebody a little bit lesser known. And you know, that being said, I'm okay with that. I mean, there was a time, you know, before this season started, I would have said, please take him. But you know, now I don't feel that way anymore. I've the confidence level, which was shattered for me for Les Miles last year, has kind of risen back up. But it could very well, he can lose some points with me if he doesn't do what's necessary and take care of business and fire Gary Croton after this bowl game, regardless of how many points we put up or what we do
exactly on
Friday night. I mean, that needs to happen. If that doesn't happen, then, you know, he's going to fall into a lot of scrutiny again because he won't make the changes necessary. And if he's going to do that, then he's going to follow along with Gary Croton, because if we can't get this offense straightened out, we're going to have a lot of issues again next year.
I do hear Mike Hayward's looking for a job.
Yeah, I did hear he was out of work. So,
you know,
that's a place where Rich Rodriguez could end up as Pitt. And Pitt would be doing himself a huge favor if they hired him. That guy could go back into the Big East and dominate that conference. It'd be him and Gary Patterson and nobody else. I mean, that's how big that conference has gotten over the last couple of years. And he can go back and be the king again. And I think it's a good chance that he's going to end up over there. Either there or UConn. So, just my opinion. So,
Could always take the Pitt job.
I'm sorry?
He could take the Pitt job. You're absolutely right.
They hate him at West Virginia already because he left, right? He's a West Virginia alum. He left, you know, he's not supposed to leave mama, whatever. Okay, backyard brawl, Pitt versus West Virginia, big rivalry every year. You want to see him go from just most hated man in the state of West Virginia to pure out unadulterated antichrist, take the Pitt job.
Without question, yeah.
But wouldn't happen. I personally think y'all should cut off these Les Miles to Michigan rumors quickly by being the aggressors. I think the blog can take the lead on this. Start pushing Jim Harbaugh to LSU as offensive coordinator rumors.
Oh, no. Yeah.
You're going to give him a big raise from what he does as the head coach at Stanford. You think
what was funny?
He's shown, you know, coaching in the Pac-10, he can run an offense a little bit. So he's qualified to run LSU's offense. Just go off on that tangent, put a little arrogance in there. Because I think it's ridiculous. People keep trying to, you know, say, LSU to Michigan. Les Miles to Michigan. Hey, be the aggressors on this. Flip the rumors around. Miles is staying. You're going to go get Harbaugh.
Yeah.
The funnier deal is Chavis to Texas, our defensive coordinator. I mean, with Muschamp leaving Texas to go, I mean, I don't know how that sits in your state over there, but Muschamp leaving the coach in waiting at Texas to go to, and I know that's your hated rival up there, so I don't know what's the buzz with that, with Muschamp coming back in the SEC, and now Mack Brown's still there, and they're down this year and everything else. You're up and coming. You know, how's that sitting in that state?
Well, the deal with Chavis actually was not a big – okay, first they were looking at that guy over at Tennessee, the one who used to be at Boise State.
Yeah.
I'm drawing a blank on his name right now. And then I heard, like, I actually thought Chavis would be a decent person for him to go after, because I've seen what he did when he in the SEC with LSU and then before that Tennessee. I think he barely got a mention. Right now the thing is that that defense coordinator over at Stanford, Fangio, is that his name? Fangio, something like that, Vic?
I don't know.
He's a 3-4 guy.
Yeah,
did a hell of a job, got Stanford to top 25 in total defense this year, which, considering what Stanford has to work with, it's pretty freaking impressive.
Mm-hmm.
He's supposed to be a big candidate, and then Mississippi State's defense coordinator, who Manny Diaz.
Manny, yeah.
The other guys are supposed to be looking at. This is just going off of what's on Burn Orange Nation today. I glanced at that earlier today. Muschamp leaving, it's not so much just it was the defense coordinator who left. It was the whole, this was supposed to be the head coach in waiting. This was supposed to be the future of the program. When they fired Greg Davis over there, that was okay because the fans wanted that. They've been wanting that for years. They kind of feel, I think where y'all are with Croton is where they've been with Davis for about 10, 15 years now. It's been pretty bad. There have been a lot of people who questioned Davis for a long time. Muschamp leaving was just, I mean, that gutted the program pretty much, because that was, they thought there's going to be a smooth transition. It's going to go from Mack Brown when he retires, and well, Muschamp takes over, and they know their next head coaches.
Well, all of a sudden, now they lost both of their coordinators, and they only know who half their coaches are. And you're talking about a complete rebuild of the program and the staff. So that was just a big hit from there. So the expectation is they will go after someone young, someone energetic, someone pretty well-known, known to be a recruiter. The coordinator over at Stanford is someone who's well-known, has NFL experience. And Diaz is a young guy who's supposed to be doing really, really well. Personally, I don't care who they hire, as long as he's even front guy. I want them to keep – they've been running the 4-2-5 under Muschamp. If they bring in a guy who runs a 4-3 or a 4-2-5, I'm thrilled with that because that plays right into our hands, because right now we are one of two odd front defenses in the Big 12. There's us and Tech. And Tech, their coordinator, James Wells, used to be over at Alabama. He just left. So now we may be the only one. And I kind of like to keep it that way because the less teams that run what we do on defense, the better it is for us. Because no one else sees what we do. You know, and you don't get much practice with it, and it's a big adjustment going from, if you're an offensive line, having to block an even front. You get to see that every game versus having to block an odd front. And right now we are the oddball, we're the curveball that no one sees. So I'd like to keep it that way. If they bring in the guy from Stanford, he's a 3-4 guy, and he's a very, very good 3-4 guy. So that would be a little bit of a worry for me. But either way, right now we're kind of up and coming. I like where our team is. We're young. And until Texas can rebuild their offensive line, which is really the big problem they had this year. I mean, they don't really have the talent they need to have on their running back either. They're supposed to be bringing in a guy, Malcolm Brown, who's supposed to be a stud. But until they can rebuild their offensive line, I think we're still going to be an advantage. And, of course, they have to come to College Station next year. So, you know, I'll tell you right now, we're going to win that game. So I'm not really worried about who they're hiring right now. I've actually been watching what Charlotte's been doing a little bit more than I have what Texas been doing the last couple of weeks, even though their little soap opera is always enjoyable. You always got to love it when your rival is suffering a little bit, you know, kind of sure. Drink their tears of pain and brings you joy.
Without question. Let's get into the football now a little bit now and start talking about the game. And I want to open up with it and talk about the turning points for y'all, I believe, was obviously when y'all inserted Tannehill at quarterback. Just talk about that a little bit and how key that was as far as turning around y'all's season. Because y'all were struggling early in the season before that move was made.
Yeah, well they have there's a couple of things that kind of go along with it. Everybody points to Tannehill. There was an injury at left guard, so we moved our starting right tackle over to left guard, Brian Thomas, which we ended up starting a true freshman right tackle named Jake Matthews. And at that point of the season, our offensive line started to gel a little better, so that helped. Christian Michael was our leading rusher. He got injured at the same time, so he was knocked. He broke his leg. So Cyrus Gray became our starting running back, and we found something there that I think our coaches didn't even know was there at the time. And then Tannehill came in, and all year long we've been a team who's been killing ourselves with turnovers up to that point. The first six games, we were playing close games because of the turnovers, or we were losing games because of the turnovers. And then Tannehill came in there and was hitting some passes that, quite frankly, Gerard Johnson was not because of his shoulder. And those extra first downs that he made by hitting those passes, and then the improved running game and the offensive line gelling together, all came together at the same time, so that our offense became much better, and our defense kind of started picking it up. So a lot of people point to Tannehill being the catalyst, but I honestly, if you're going to ask me, I think the one thing that people overlook and the big difference in our team has been Cyrus Gray at running back stepping up and having 600-yard games in a row. I mean, you guys know as well as anybody, you have a good running game and you don't turn the ball over, you're not going to lose too many games. The rest of it's just playing some good defense, playing with passion, creating some turnovers. And so Tannehill was a pretty big part, but it was almost a complete team turnaround.
Well, that being said, I mean, you know, A&M, you know, they're up and coming this year. You know, they're kind of back in the limelight a little bit after, you know, I don't want to say being down, but kind of being on the back burner for quite a few years there.
We've definitely been down. You can say that.
And then, but as far as that goes, you know, you got your key players in place. And like you said, early in the season, you had a lot of injuries. Are there, say we get into this game on Friday, you get one guy goes, I mean, is there a certain guy that you can ill afford to lose in this game that is like the key to the game? I mean, you're saying the running back here, but earlier you were talking about an offensive lineman that, you know, possibly he goes down. That was a big issue there. is there one guy more so, or maybe two guys, something happens to them that, boom, you can just about write this game off? I mean, LSU,
yeah,
so to speak, can, it's almost like we can reload on talent. We do have a wealth of talent. You know, sometimes the coaching of the talent is suspect, but the talent is there at LSU, at, even on the second and third levels. Does A&M have that second and third level to go to, or do, or are you relying mainly on the starters?
It just depends on the position you're talking about. I mean, Cyrus Gray is our second-string running back. He's a 1,000-yard rusher. If he goes down, even if he doesn't go down, you'll just shut him down. Obviously, it's going to be harder for us to score. That would be a big worry. He dings his ankle or something early in the game. And then on defense, of course, Von Miller, the Buckus Award winner,
right,
is the guy who makes it happen. So, I mean, we have plenty of wide. We go 6-7 deep at wide receiver. I mean, we can – you know, mm-hmm. Ryan Swope's dinged up, but if he misses the game, we have a guy named Kendrick McNeil who's a pretty solid wide receiver himself. So I would say Von Miller and Cyrus Gray are the two guys who we can most ill afford to lose or see injured. Or, like I said, even if you guys just shut down Cyrus Gray, which I'm sure is the whole goal of your defense going into the game, then I think we'll struggle immensely on offense. So those are really the two guys we can't afford to lose out.
Yeah, I'd love to get Von Miller on the Saints. That's for daggone sure.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, Von, I would say that Von is the emotional leader of our defense. So, one of the big parts of the turnaround was that Von got healthy. Because I was in our opening game against SFA, against Stephen F. Austin, and he got dinged up, he kind of sprained his ankle. And I think they kind of hemmed and hawed. You know, you never really know unless it's a season-ending injury. They never really tell you what's wrong. And I think he had a high ankle sprain, and they just kind of said, oh, he's got a little tweak of an ankle, whatever. He wasn't the same for about 3 or 4 games. He was out there playing because the guy's a freak of nature. But he wasn't. And I thought, well, you know, we're asking him to do some different things. He's out there doing coverage. He's running around. I mean, I don't want to give you the idea he was terrible out there, but he was out there. But if you look at the last 5 games, when we started playing Nebraska, started playing Oklahoma, started playing Texas, started playing Baylor, all of a sudden it's Vaughn unleashed, okay? And he took it to another level. And when you've got a difference maker like that, I mean, a guy who has been timed a legit 4 or 5 coming off the edge, it's hard to account for that. The offense has to, the opposing offensive line especially, has to account for a player like that. And that makes a difference. I mean, it makes everybody else around him better. And he is the leader of our defense. Our defense coordinator, Tim DeRuiter, said every single defensive call that we have has something in there for Miller. So
well, talk a little bit about
if he went down, that would be kind of, not just from the physical standpoint of where we would miss his talent on the field, but just the leadership, the fact the guy is the emotional leader of the team. That would be someone who would really hurt us.
Okay. I can go with that. I mean, if, you know, he's the key for us basically getting past your defense. But, I mean, like I say, I'm not as familiar with Texas A&M because by the time we usually got home from our games and stuff like that, and the way the coverage works out here on the TV, you don't catch much on the Texas A&M games, you know, when you get back to the house or anything. So, like I said, I'm not as up to speed on what y'all are doing. But you're telling he's the key. You know, the games that y'all have lost, or teams have actually scored, and obviously you said he was hurt for a few games, but the games that y'all have struggled in defensively, what has been some of the key, and what do you expect LSU to do T-wise to take him out of the game?
Take him out of the game? 2 tight end sets. I think y'all, from what I've seen from y'all use a lot of 21 personnel, occasionally bring him 22 personnel. Crowell likes to do multiple formations.
Right. Yeah, he does.
Yeah, we'll do a lot of 2 tight end sets, I think, to try to neutralize that.
You know, honestly, I guess 2 tight end set, double teaming him, keeping a running back in to chip on him would help. I honestly don't know how you're going to attack him. My whole view of the game is, as far as our defense against your offenses, you guys have an extremely talented team. You know, you're talking about Ridley. I'm just looking at this from afar, but to me, you guys probably have 2 or 3 running backs behind them who are probably can get 100 yards in any given game, who are big guys who would, you know, over 200 pounds, who would 220 pounds give us some problems. So even if Ridley wasn't there, I think it'd be, you know, a tough task for us to stop your running game. So to me, it all comes down to whether, you know, which Jordan, this is from far from just me watching the games, our defense will succeed if Jordan Jefferson plays poorly, in my opinion. Because when Jordan Jefferson's on, you're an extremely hard defense, an extremely hard offense to beat, an extremely hard team to beat. When he's off, you know, you can go three and out, and teams can move the ball on you sometimes, and you know, because your defense gets tired just like everybody else's. But I don't know how you guys are going to attack Von Miller.
If he's going to be – flip a coin and see if he's going to be on or off that game, you know. Vegas quits betting on our games because they can't predict that.
It's pretty predictable. You pretty much paint a picture, and it's the same thing every week as far as what a defense is going to do to stop LSU. They're going to load the box and basically just force LSU to pass. And if we can't throw the football effectively, it's going to be a long day. I.e. Auburn, I.e. Arkansas, but you come out against Ole Miss and Alabama, you spread them out, you complete some passes downfield. Guess what? You gain 300 yards in the second half against Alabama. You know, one of the top defenses in the nation. It's just a matter of what Jordan Jefferson shows up, and then that's, you know, he's, you know, he, and that's, you know, we thought he turned the corner after Alabama and Ole Miss, but you know what? Arkansas was the same old deal, and that's the last time we saw him. And what's this month layoff done? You know, for the team, has it rejuvenated him a little bit? We've seen in the past with Les Miles teams that it has, but then last year it didn't really do anything, and can't really just blame the turf on that because Penn State had to play on that turf too, so. It'd be interesting to see because I've seen, last year was the first time I really saw Les Miles' team really come out flat in a bowl game. And every other year, you know, Miami in 05, Notre Dame in 06, Ohio State in 06, you know, 08, what's 08? And I'm thinking seasons, not the actual time the bowl game was played. You know, we've come out, we've played, you know, I guess not with a chip on our shoulder, but like a well-rested team who needed a lot of rest would come out and play. Just you're fiery, emotional. And I just don't know with this team. This team has taken on a different identity over the last couple of seasons than what it had pre-2008. So I'm just a little nervous about what's going to happen because I know what that A&M is going to do. They're going to load the box. And if we can't throw, we're going to be in for a long day. It's going to be relying on the defense to make plays for us, and hopefully we get to play them special teams.
Well, we know what's going to happen on offense. He's going to have – they've gone over those first 20 plays of the game over and over and over. So it's basically going to be a luck on a draw on who had the better game plan to start with because we're not going to change those 20 plays probably because that's the only thing Jordan Jefferson knows in his head is I'm going to know how to run these 20 plays. I'm going to know exactly where I'm going to throw the football on each play. And if somebody is there for the defense, then we're screwed. If the defense is playing right into our hands, then it's going to be a great day. You know, that's going to be the start of the game right there. It happens every time you have a layoff 2 weeks. They come out, they know exactly what they're going to do in those first 2-3 series. And to the T, they have the plays called already.
Yeah, and what I'm really excited about is I'm really excited to see what a well-rested LSU defense can come out and do because we saw a defense that just got tired at the end of the season. It was obvious. Injuries start piling up, and every team has injuries. I understand that, but You know, wear and tear throughout a whole season of, you know, being on the field so much because your offense can't sustain drives definitely takes its toll. So being able to see LSU with a well-rested defense, maybe get back to more of that attacking mentality that we had early in the season that garnered so many sacks and so many quarterback hurries and things like that. So we saw that kind of taper off as the season went on, and I think it just had to do with a lot of attrition because, you know, once again, we had to rely on defense so many times to keep us in ball games and win a lot of ball games for us.
Yep, agreed. Definitely agreed. So yeah, and then even guys like Patrick Peterson, even at the end of the year, he was not his same self. Granted, you still don't want to throw the ball at him. Yeah, definitely don't want to throw the ball his way because he will bait you into it. I don't think even as good as Patrick Peterson, and I'm gonna make this statement right now. I'm probably PEO some people. But even as good as Patrick Peterson is, I still say he wasn't better than Corey Webster in college at doing that, baiting people into things. But anyway.
Was better or not better than Corey Webster?
Not better than Corey Webster.
I agree with you. I think Corey Webster, still will go down as one of the greatest defensive backs in LSU. He was so good. Exactly what you're talking about. Peterson, I don't know if he's at that level. He's so talented. I think
he's got more athletic ability.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But you're still not going to throw his way. I mean, bottom line, you're not going to throw his way. He's going to return kicks. The other question is he going to be able to stay in the game, because it's one of those big games? Are they going to just put IVs in him now? You know, let's just drill the hole now and keep the IV flowing.
You know, since the North Carolina game, that really wasn't a problem. So, you know, we'll just kind of see what happens.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of my – I had a thought about where I was going to go next, and I just kind of lost it for a second. But as I try to get it back, how do y'all, as far as offense goes for y'all, A&M, how do y'all plan to attack, you know, to account for, you know, some of the guys we talked about, how she was going to defend Von Miller. But what about y'all as far as, you know, Patrick Peterson, and of course we got Calvin Shepard, our middle linebacker. What do y'all think y'all need to do offensively to you know, get some yards and some points on that LSU defense?
Well, I was going to say, I can almost guarantee you we're going to throw out Patrick Peterson, because I'm assuming he's going to be covering Jeff Fuller. And we're just not going to – I mean, we haven't – the last few games, people have been double covering him. And I think Prince Makamura in Nebraska covered him pretty well. We didn't go to him too much, so I'm not saying we're going to throw him 10 times. But we're at least going to throw the ball out to him a couple times out there to see if he can do anything. So he will – Peterson will – decent balls, whether that's a good thing or bad thing, I guess we'll find out. I know you're talking about Coy Webster. I was never afraid of Coy Webster. I'm a little bit afraid of Patrick Peterson and what he can do with the ball in his hands. But as far as attacking your defense, you know, I think Mike Sherman's really an NFL guy. We're going to try to run the ball and then run some play action off the run. We do run. So we're a pro-style team, a pro-set team, but we do run some spread variations. We'll throw some slants in there, and we'll throw some bubble screens to the wide receivers. So a lot of it comes down to, you know, do you can your defensive backs tackle on a bubble screen? You know, can they fight off a block and tackle? And to me, a lot, like I said, I mean, the whole game is your quarterback, and whether – because I honestly don't think if Jordan Jefferson's on, I don't think we're going to be able to cover your wide receivers, and you know, Terrence Tolliver and the talented wide receivers you have. So I'm obviously hoping he's going to be off that day. But if he's on, we're going to be in trouble. But as far as us going against y'all, I think it's going to come down to can we block Nevis, you know, in the interior. I have some confidence that our linemen being able to get out and our fullback getting out there and taking care of Shepard, and I have some confidence in Cyrus Gray being able to make a miss a little bit, but are we going to be able to win at the point of attack? And then if we can, which I'm not sure we will, to be honest, if we can win at the point of attack, then we'll run some play action off it. And I kind of expect – we have a freshman tight end named Nehemiah Hicks out of Hutto, Texas, down near Austin, who's a really good athlete. I kind of expect him to show up a little bit more in this game. We used him a lot earlier in the year and haven't used him as much lately, but I kind of expect to see our tight ends a little more involved in the passing game. It just, you know, it all comes down to whether we can block Nevis and then whether we can get anyone open against Peterson. But we're going to be – I think we are who we are. We're going to try to run the ball and run some play action off it, and if that doesn't work, we're going to throw some wide receiver screens to Ryan Swope and see if we can get our skill guys open in space. We do have some pretty good skill, and – we're still somewhat of a young team, but we have some young, fast guys, and I don't know how fast they're going to look against your defense, but we have some pretty good skill and some speed, and we'll see how it all works out. I'm kind of torn. I remember seeing I thought a pretty darn good LSU team play Texas in the Cotton Bowl a few years back and lose because they had I think you guys had your safety covering, playing corner and covering Roy Williams that day.
They had a wide receiver playing safety.
I was there. It was horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I'm kind of, you know, I'm a little, you know, you guys are talking. From my point of view, you guys, I know you're a very talented team, and I know you're going to be, you know, you're going to try to run the ball, and I know, you know, you guys have big linemen on offense, and you're fast on defense at every position, and it's going to be tough. So, I mean, I wanted A&M to play LSU because, frankly, I thought we were a horrible matchup for Bama, and we would have gotten drilled somewhat like Michigan State just did. But I also wanted us, you know, playing Georgia last year, playing Arkansas every year, and then playing LSU this year. If we're going to play in the SEC and we're ever going to compete for national titles, we need to play teams that have talent like this. So I knew this was going to be a tough game. I can't sit here and say, man, this is what we're going to do. We're going to, you know, we're going to pound on Nevis. We're going to wear him out. We're going to run the ball up the gut. We can do this because, you know, look at it on paper. I think you guys have a more talented team. Fortunately, the game's not played on paper, and Jordan Jefferson is schizophrenic. And, you know, your head coach sometimes loses his mind at the end of games. So, you know, that's what I'm hoping for as an Aggie, because I think, you know, man for man, I'd still say you guys have the advantage. I'm just hoping we do have a dynamic defensive coordinator. Maybe we can create some turnovers. And I think give it a month to prepare, our defense should be ready for your offense. I'm kind of expecting a low-scoring game. But if you guys were to come out there and Jordan Jefferson was to hit Terrence Tolliver on a slant, he goes 80 yards, and we lose 31-14, it wouldn't really shock me at all, to be honest.
I got you. Yeah, and you're right. I think you're right on about what as far as what AM's going to try to do out to LSU defensively. Because if LSU's weak somewhere, it's up the middle, and on the interior, and our Kelvin Shepard's a beast. He's all over the field, but we've shown we've been vulnerable to teams that could run right at us, and because our defensive line we're quick, but we're not big on the defensive line, so. That's something we talked about before the season even started, which was a concern. But we seemed to be so quick off the ball early on in the year that it wasn't really affecting us. But as the season wore on, we saw teams start to wear us down. Auburn did it, so well, because not only because they had Cam Newton back there, but they got everybody involved defensively. And then, you talked a little bit about a tight end. That's another place where LSU's always been vulnerable. We've had a history of being vulnerable. The passes to being able to cover a tight end. So
tight end, and then running back out the backfield on a little curl.
Yeah, yeah. So history of being vulnerable in that. And Arkansas is not doing a very good job of upholding the SEC's integrity against the Big Ten right now. I'm a little pissed off.
Well, I don't count. Like I said, I don't count Arkansas as an SEC school anyway. So there you go.
That's right. That's right. Ryan Mallett equals Ryan Leaf.
Exactly.
Or Dan McGuire 2.0, in my opinion. The old San Diego State quarterback who went to the pros at 6'10 and wasn't elusive at all and got killed, didn't last. I think that's what I'm hoping he goes pro, because he's a really a fine passing quarterback, and I don't want to face him again next fall. But I don't think he's going to be worth anything in the pros because he's not immobile enough. But he can, he can make every throw on the field. I mean, he does have a phenomenal arm.
Yeah, he does. He does.
I wouldn't give up on Arkansas yet. They'll keep throwing the ball, and Ohio State really hasn't seen a quarterback like him. Unless they start getting pressure on him consistently, I think Arkansas is going to come back in this one. Plus,
yeah,
Mal Davis
might
wear them down.
I don't think the game's out of hand at all. So,
yeah, Mal Davis might wear them down like he did to y'all. You're talking about your defensive lineman undersized. Well, we don't have a Mal Davis in our backfield. We have a 210-pound running back, and then we have a true freshman. Well, we have a kid who has fumbling issues behind him named Bradley Stevens. And then we have a third-string running back named Ben Molina, who's I don't think he's carried the ball at all this year. And he's a freshman, a true freshman who we were trying to redshirt. But when Christian Michael went out, that necessitated him playing. So, I hope we block Nevis and we create some holes. But, if this is a 10-7 ball game in the fourth quarter, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
No,
it'd
not
be boring.
Not,
we'll be really
yeah.
drunk at that point, but yeah.
Pretty much. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all. Low scoring, but doesn't surprise me at all with LSU. We just don't score a lot of points, but we always seem to find a way to be able to put up at least 20. Sometimes I don't know how it happens, but it's just a matter, I think, of defense and special teams putting our offense in good positions to get some points, and. Whether or not we can sustain drives, I don't know. It's always been a problem with us all year, sustaining long drives, because we just can't get any consistency in the passing game. And you get us in third and six, third and seven. If we're living in third and six, third and seven, we're in trouble, because we just can't convert those. We can't convert those plays sometimes. I mean, it's just really difficult. Unless Jordan Jefferson's thinking on his feet and making plays with his legs, that's kind of.
But
you said
Jordan just thinking, right?
Yeah. I know it's an oxymoron.
All right, just checking.
Yeah, so I did say it. But, Pat, you got anything else?
No, other than what my weird score prediction will be and how we'll get there.
Okay. Well, let's do that. And before we do that, since this will be the last this will be the last show, and before the game, before, I guess we probably won't do a show before the national championship game either. Let's go ahead and pick that game too, and then we'll finish breaking down the Cotton Bowl, and we'll all give score predictions on that as well. So I'll start off with the BCS national championship game. I like Auburn for a lot of the same reasons I like a lot of SEC teams so far in the bowl games. Just because I think while both offenses are really flashy, I think Nick Fairley and that Auburn defensive line is going to be the difference. You know, a lot of people picked on Auburn's defensive backs because they were, you know, they gave up a lot of passing yards, but when that defensive line can get into the backfield and cause havoc in the cause havoc for a quarterback, it kind of makes your defensive backs look a little bit better, and that's what they did against LSU. And I think as the game progresses, I think they're going to be able to do that against Oregon. So I like Auburn to win something like 38-28, something like that. I think they pull away at the end. And neither one of y'all can go next, because I'm not.
Oh. Well, I guess if we're talking now, if I'm going with the picks that I actually really made, I have to go with Oregon. I hate to pick against the SEC, you know, and I don't want to pick against the SEC because I want to show our dominance. But, you know, I still say that something just keeps telling me that Oregon's going to take this game. Maybe it's the quickness of the offense. Yeah, Auburn's got big defensive linemen. They're going to try and get there. But Oregon runs their plays so fast and so much in there, you don't have time to sub. And I think that's actually going to hurt Auburn in a way. Yeah, early in the game, they're going to be okay because they're going to be fresh. But when it comes into the game and Oregon keeps subbing and keep getting those fast guys out there and I just really got a feeling it's going to come down to that. There's going to be a turnover or something right there. It's just going to – and I think Auburn's going to win. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game, don't get me wrong, because Auburn's going to run it down their throat as well as throw it. But it's going to come down to some kind of weird play that's going to turn the game. And I don't think it's going to be more than about a 7-point win. So it's going to be less than a touchdown. But I still think Oregon's actually going to take this one, and I'm going to stick with that prediction.
Okay. All right. My friend from A&M's got a prediction on the game.
Yeah. I hope I'm wrong on this because I think it's kind of all that's wrong in college football right now. But I think Auburn's going to win 34-20. I've kind of enjoyed Chip Kelly this past week because it's been a bit somewhat confident he is, and I hope he knows something and he's seen something on tape, and I hope Oregon pulls it out, and I do think they have some pretty progressive coaches, and they kind of look at football in an intellectual way a little different than a lot of people do, and I hope that that's successful. But I don't think Oregon's seen a defense like Auburn has, even though Auburn doesn't have an amazing defense. They have a pretty physical, you know, your typical SEC defense. They have Fairley, who's a monster. I've said before that if you take away Cam Newton, take away Fairley, I think Auburn's a 5-17.
Oh, without question.
You know, yeah, so and it disgusts me because obviously Cam Newton was bought, but
yeah.
And he shouldn't be eligible. And I don't think Chizik is a good coach, to be honest, by any stretch of the imagination.
He's lucky with the talent he got.
Yeah.
He's the farthest come with college football. I got you spelling to something that just, just unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, a freaking all-world quarterback falls into his lap. So, I mean, that guy's going to make him a lot of money, basically, because he's looking a lot better than he is, in my opinion. But I think Auburn about 34-20 is what I see, just because they haven't seen – I mean, just because Oregon hasn't seen an SEC defense like that.
Right.
So I hope I'm wrong, because I want Oregon to win, but I think that's what's going to happen.
I got you.
All right, the other A&M guy has rejoined us. Beer Gut, you there?
All right.
I'm back. Sorry about that, guys. I was out in my car driving somewhere and – hit one of those blind spots and got cut out, and every time I tried to call back, I ended up getting a busy signal. But
gotcha.
Yeah, we're in the conversation. I heard y'all talking about Auburn and Oregon. I'm a huge Chip Kelly fan, so I hope Oregon beats the living shit out of them. Excuse my language.
Yeah.
I don't mean to swear on your show. I really think what Auburn has done this year is an affront to college football, honestly. The whole Cam Newton thing. Gene Chizik is a disgrace as a coach. He was a joke at Iowa State. I didn't respect him as a defense coordinator when he was at Texas. So for him to somehow become this, oh, my God, coach of the year because of Cam Newton, the whole thing makes you want to throw up, okay? I happen to think what's going on at Ohio State right now with Jim Tressel telling those five players who traded their memorabilia and jerseys and helmets and everything for tattoos is pretty pathetic. And then Tressel saying, oh, you can get a promise you're coming back next year. so you can serve your five-game suspension. You can't go pro. No, you're coming back next year. Promise that. You can play the game, and then you can go pro anyway. And okay, that's just dirty and that's sleazy. Chizik is beyond that. Okay, I mean, the whole thing disgusts me because it's this freaking, just this awful coach. I mean, honestly, I think if a random guy walking off the street walked into the Auburn program and scammed Newton, fell into his lap, he'd still be in the national title game. And it's not so much that I think, oh, that Newton is such a difference maker. I think it's a freaking joke that Newton got Heisman. I don't even think he's all that incredibly dynamic. I'm sorry. There are players this year. I happen to think Denard Robinson over at Michigan is the best dual threat quarterback I've seen probably since Michael Vick, Michael Bishop, or Vince Young, one of those guys, okay? As far as a true guy who's got a nice, pretty good arm, can throw the ball, and can really just make a difference with his legs. You know, honestly, I think Newton benefits a lot from the fact that, you know, Miles Vaughn's pretty much a heck of a heck of an offensive coordinator and makes him look a lot better than he is. And, you know, unfortunately, y'all don't really have a dynamic quarterback, or really a dynamic, I shouldn't say dynamic quarterback, because I actually think Jefferson's pretty good when he's on. But y'all don't have a dynamic offense this year to kind of take advantage of the talent you've got.
Right.
So, I mean, I think y'all should have beaten Auburn. And I would have been cool with you beating Auburn because I don't like Cam Newton or that whole program.
Yeah, right.
So that whole thing makes me sick. I happen to love Chip Kelly. I had the opportunity to meet Chip Kelly this year in San Antonio, and you talk to that guy for 5 minutes, you are ready to put on the pads and go play for him. I mean, he has that kind of charisma. He obviously knows the game. I learned more about football listening to him for an hour. And, I mean, the man coaches a no-huddle offense. That's also how he teaches. That's how he lectures. He will give a four-hour lecture in 1 hour. Okay, and he's just, I'm a huge fan of him. He's a man of his word. He helped me out with some stuff I asked him about. And so I'm really happy to see the success he's had this year. And so I'm really just all behind Oregon. I don't know if they have the personnel to match up with Auburn. Okay, I don't know if y'all have noticed this, but if you ever watch Oregon play, some of their players are just kind of small.
Yeah, they are.
Well, Michael James ain't that big. But
so what's their,
I'm hoping there's a miracle and they pull it off. I don't think they will, but I'm hoping so.
Gotcha. What's your score prediction?
Score prediction. If what I want to happen, what I think might happen, happens, which is that Auburn gets out a little bit in front early in the game, like 24-10 first half, and Oregon makes some adjustments in the second half. Ideal situation, I think we're looking at 31-27 Oregon. That's what I want to happen. Now, realistically, I think we're looking at a really ugly turnover fest of a game, and Auburn's going to win 31-17.
All right.
So, which will make me puke, because then Gene Chizik will be a national championship winning coach.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see if he can actually sustain anything beyond 2-3 years.
Yeah.
I'm not sold on him either. Nobody in SEC is sold on him, I can tell you that.
No. You can't go 2-9 at Iowa State and all of a sudden just walk into Auburn and start doing that. I mean, it's just without kind of weird explanation for it. But
you know,
right.
Say what you want about Les Miles. He sustained winning over an extended period of time now. So
yeah, he has. We had a couple down years, but for the most part, you know, he's done a solid job at LSU. So you know, so well, all right. Let's predict the Cotton Bowl and A&M. I'll go with y'all first. I guess I'll go with. I'll go back to the beer guy, and I'll get his prediction on the Cotton Bowl.
I think either way. Okay, one team's going to win, one team's going to lose either way. I really think this is going to be some of the low-scoring game. I see it being a defensive struggle. My only concern for A&M is our special teams aren't all that solid. I don't know how good, honestly, y'all's are. I'm a little worried that I know Miles likes to run fakes on field goals, stuff like that. I think either way, winner is 24-17.
Okay.
And I'm hoping that's A&M to 24. But it just depends on how well we can control your running game, shut down your offense, and if Jefferson's on or off. And if he's on, we're going to have some problems because you definitely have the talent. If we can cover Terrence Tolliver, if we can cover him, he's someone I'm worried about, someone that A&M recruited some years ago. So if we can cover him and we can keep Jefferson in check and stop your running game, stop Ridley. I like our chances. Hold you all 17 points and win the game. But 24-17.
All right. And I forgot the other A&M guy's name. I apologize.
All right, Mike Tagg. I'm going to go with a little biased view here. I still don't think we match up man-to-man, and I'm worried about you guys. And I'm going to say 22-20, A&M pulls it out. You guys go for a two-point conversion with 0 seconds on the clock, and then we bat the ball down. Just because I'm assuming the Mad Hatters, luck's going to run out one day. I'm hoping it's –
there's no grass seed on the field.
Yeah, exactly. A little extra grass seed. Someone slips, and that'll get the job done.
Hi, Mr. Morris.
All right. Well, you know, we were talking about special teams. I do think special teams are going to play a big part. And, yeah, our field goal kicker is solid. He's very solid. You know, not only can he kick field goals, but he's a heck of an athlete as well. So, that being said, I think two things are going to happen. One is Jasper's going to make a couple field goals, you know, from a distance, especially kicking off a turf. And he's going to come up with like a pass or something like that, like you said, a fake, some kind of way where he's going to be responsible for a touchdown or a score in another way than a field goal. And then secondly is, and I think this is the factor, nobody seems to be talking about this whatsoever, and I haven't heard one word, Russell Shepherd returns back to Texas and has a game, has a decent game on it. So I think you're going to see an end around where he breaks one or something like that, where he hits a hole. That's our other game breaker, and I think LSU, and granted, I'm a homer, but LSU wins by about 10 points. I'd say anywhere from that 27 to 17 range.
All right. It'd be good to see Russell Shepherd touch the ball. I mean, he hasn't carried the ball since the Vanderbilt game.
Mm-hmm.
What is the deal with that? I saw a film with Shepherd, thought he was phenomenal. In high school, I mean, a lot of people compare themselves to every single freaking dual-threat quarterback coming out now gets compared to Vince Young, which is a series of things. First, you were the next Michael Bishop, and you were the next Michael Vick. Now you're the next Vince Young. And now they try to say Terrell Pryor of Ohio State is next Vince Young, which is a freaking joke because he's nothing close.
Yeah,
but Russell Shepherd was the first guy who I actually saw in high school who I was like, apt comparison, as far as the ability to pass the ball, the ability to run the ball, athleticism, just pure physical, raw athletic ability. Shepherd had it, and I'm kind of surprised that they haven't used him as much as quarterback.
Yeah, he's a victim of a bad offensive coordinator. I mean, why they haven't tried to use him at quarterback, I don't know. I don't know if it's a problem with him not being able to pick up the offensive game plan. I mean, from all accounts, it's a pretty complicated offensive game plan that, you know, it's probably too complicated because it just doesn't work. And,
so complicated, the offense and defense can figure it out.
Yeah. It's a matter of, I guess, just him just trying to find his way, and hopefully it pans out for him, because he came in with so much hype, and, you know, a lot of LSU fans who get kind of crazy and gung-ho about one recruit, you know, anointing him the savior and doing the same damn thing with Zach Mettenberger coming in next year. That, you know, we put so much hype into the recruit that, you know, by the time he's done, you're like, okay, didn't really do anything. And, you know, it's unfortunate because he just doesn't get – he doesn't see the field a whole lot because our offense is just very inept and doesn't know how to get him in space to utilize him to the best of his ability. It's really disappointing because I think it lies more along the lines of what Crow tries to do offensively than it does with him, you know, not performing in practice and things like that. So that's just my opinion. I have no really factual basis on that. It's just what I believe to be the case. Just to sum it up. So.
Now your score.
What's that? Oh, now my score.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
I'm gonna go off. Patrick, I'm gonna feed off your Josh Jasper thing, and say he's the MVP of this game. He's gonna kick two field goals, and he's gonna score a touchdown on a fake punt, and we're gonna win 13-10. And Les Miles is still going to retain Gary Crone as the offensive coordinator because that's just the fate.
I'm still going to buy my season tickets next year. Crap.
Yeah, I'm still going to go to the freaking games, and it's going to be the same damn thing next year. We're going to be sweating out games against North Texas because we can't sustain an offense. And we're going to win games against Division I AA teams by 15 points because that's just the way we play. And it's just, we're a freaking Big Ten team playing in the SEC. And it's just the way it is. It's just the way it's going to be. So 13-10 is my prediction. Josh Jasper is your MVP. He's going to throw for more yards than Jared Lee and Jordan Jefferson combined in this game with his touchdown pass on the fake punt.
All
So that's what I got. So that will podcast. If you don't have anything else, I'll just go ahead and I guess I'll wrap this puppy up, put a nice little bow on it. Nice beginning to the new year.
I do have one question for y'all. I mean, I don't know if do we have time or is this show only going for an hour?
We don't matter.
Okay.
Anything we could do to make podcast have to edit more stuff?
I just
want
to know.
Drop a couple F bombs in there too. He likes when people do that.
He loves that.
Nah, I just want to know. Okay, the whole deal with, like I said, I was there in '95 the last time we played y'all at Kyle Field, and Leland McElroy went crazy, and y'all had this true freshman running back named Kevin Falk, who the Wrecking Crew kind of struggled to stop, and turned out that he was going to be an awesome player, and that was actually a really good defensive line. I think all three of those defensive linemen ended up playing in the NFL and making all pro, so it was actually something to say. He's doing so well against them. And then DiNardo comes out and says, well, we need to change this, try to rebuild this program, and, you know, starting out the season every year with A&M, that's just not working. And, of course, the irony was the next year A&M goes 6-6, and LSU, I think, won 8 games or something like that, went to a bowl game. I think that was the year y'all beat Notre Dame in the bowl, if I remember correctly, but I could be off on that year. But anyway, so the series ends. Okay, and we didn't really start back up, and a couple of years ago, and a lot of noise has been made by the A&M side saying, well, we can't trust LSU to keep their promises, and LSU's like, well, and I've heard all sorts of rumors about, well, you know, LSU wants to play us in Baton Rouge and play us in Houston. They don't want to play at Kyle Field, and, you know, there's been talk on both sides. And I honestly thought, you know, when we started talking about doing this neutral site game with Arkansas, I mean, I wanted a neutral site game with an SEC team. And I wanted LSU, and our athletic director actually came out, and I've seen some articles about the rivalry come out. I think y'all had one linked on and the Valley Shook, and one saying, oh, well, there's Bill Byrne was just saying, well, there just wasn't an agreement. We couldn't get it done. There's no lot of talk. Well, Byrne actually came out and said, no, I'm not going to give LSU a game because I don't want to help them recruit. And he said that in 06, right after y'all won the national – 07, after the 07 season, right after y'all won the national title, and it was like, I hate to tell you, Dollar Bill, who y'all won't find out if you ever read my blog, I don't like him. But they just won the national title. It doesn't matter, okay, if we let them in the state or not. They're already recruiting here, okay? So I wanted LSU. I wanted y'all in a neutral site game, and I figured if we could do it in Dallas, or sorry, if we could do it really in Arlington and Jerry World, y'all would go for it because it would give you exposure in Texas. So it would help your recruiting in Texas every year. You'd have a game here so you could come to the in the state and tell all the moms and dads here that you will see your son once a year in state, short travel trip. You don't have to come to Baton Rouge. You can just come right over here and see your son play, and that would be a boon for y'all, and we'd get, you know, we could get to play a non-conference game against an SEC team, and it'd be a nice little media exposure game for us, and we'd get that done. Of course, we end up doing this thing with Arkansas, which is kind of a joke in some ways, because first of all, Arkansas is not as high profile right now as LSU is, and second of all, there's the old SWC history with it, but there isn't the traditional rivalry that we had kind of going with y'all. And the third thing is Jerry Jones kind of made this his own little personal home game for Arkansas. I was at the game this year, and it's kind of ridiculous how much they favor Arkansas as far as just the way the game is set up and ticket sales and really how they spend the whole freaking game showing the Arkansas band, which is just not a pretty sight all game. But what are y'all's thoughts about, you know, getting A&M and just – I know if we go in the SEC, which I'm hoping, honest to God, that this happens in 2013, I think is when they're on television – contract is our big one's up. I think that's when the ESPN contract is up. If we can get into the SEC, what would y'all's thoughts be about, you know, let's do a neutral site game, let's get a game going in the Metroplex. We might buy our way to the Arkansas deal and put them back at home, and we'll go to Fayetteville and we'll come to College Station.
Well,
what would y'all think about getting that series going again?
If y'all get into the SEC, hell, we're going, you know, you're coming to Baton Rouge and we're going to Kyle Field. I mean, that's not even a question. We have to go to the Swamp. The Swamp has to come to Tiger Stadium. We play in the big places, so that's not the issue playing in the SEC. I would want that game. Like I said at the beginning, I would trade y'all for Arkansas in a heartbeat, SEC. I would definitely trade y'all off, you know, because that's the game I used to love. I mean, even I was younger going to those games, but you could tell it was like back even when Tulane actually used to play us halfway decent sometimes. You know, you used to go to those games, you used to love it because you go back and forth with the fans. But at the same time, you had a good time, no matter if you went to A&M or A&M came to Baton Rouge. The fans got along. They knew each other because it was like neighbors in a way. You know, it was a good game. I liked the game. Now, the whole DiNardo thing and all that, that's just – that. Now you see why our program went down when DiNardo was there. So,
No, I'm all for it. I think maybe you were maybe thinking about in the series going before, you know, A&M even comes to the SEC, which I hope does happen a few years from now. But I wouldn't mind seeing something happen, you know, even if it is a neutral site game, even if it is, you know, in the best place I can think of. I mean, I know it's a lot closer to y'all than it is for us, but Reliant Stadium in Houston, you know, being a possibility. I mean, that's, you know, it's, I mean, it's for what, an hour and a half for y'all from College Station? And, I mean, from Baton Rouge, I mean, that's 4 hours. I mean, that's nothing.
Four and a half, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's, you know, I don't know what, you know, but I'd definitely like to see something happen, whether it be neutral site or home and home again, you know, and you know, hopefully, God willing, yeah, do end up in the SEC in a couple of years, because I know a lot of y'all want it, and I've talked to a few A&M fans, you know, myself, and they're all for it. They want to get into the SEC, and you know, it'd be a natural rivalry for us, you know, because y'all obviously would be in the SEC West, and I think y'all probably be the closest team to us.
Yeah, you would be, or just about almost.
Yeah, because where are you going? You're going to get Auburn's a 6-hour trip. You know, Ole Miss. I guess Ole Miss is a little closer. Oxford's up there too. If you're going from Baton Rouge, that's a nice little hike. So yeah, it would probably be the closest in proximity as far as actual miles traveled. You know, so but it's definitely something that I'm in favor of. I mean, I hated that we stopped playing A&M. I mean, because I loved it. I went to College Station twice with my parents. I think in '87 and '89, and you know, like Patrick said, it was a natural. It was kind of a natural little rivalry. The fans, you know, got into it with each other, but anything ever harmful ever happened. It was no different than, you know, LSU and Ole Miss fans going at it with each other. It was similar in a lot of those ways. I thought it was good for both universities, and it's a shame that it ended.
Yeah, I think we'll be in the SEC in 2 years. This Big 12 thing isn't going to last very long. They broke up because of unequal distribution of revenue. It's going to get even more unequal in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going to be in the SEC pretty soon. I don't think we're going to see a neutral site game just because we have a 10-year contract, unless something happens with when we join the SEC. Other than that, or if we join the SEC, Arkansas chooses not to play a neutral site. We have a 10-year contract. We have 8 years left on it. They're paying us $5 million per year to each team because that's how bad Jerry Jones wanted Arkansas to play in his little home stadium against a Texas team. So, and that's more than Texas or UGA for playing in Dallas every year. So there's no way our athletic director is going to turn down that money. So we're going to play that game, and I don't see us playing two SEC teams in a non-conference where we're going to have to play, you know, 9 Big 12 teams every
right.
year. So,
right.
But
right.
I think, like, I mean, this conference is doomed. So within 2 years, that's what I expect. In 2 years, we'll be in the SEC, and then we'll get to – hopefully by then we'll be, I think, you know, these are all kind of measuring stick games to me for the A&M program, and
mm-hmm.
hopefully by then we'll be up to the task. I think, you know, I think right now, if this year's team had been the SEC, we'd been a 7-8 win team, maybe. But, you know, as it was, we should have won the Big 12. But, that's, you know, it's ifs and buts, you know. So
right.
I think we'll be there pretty soon.
Cool. That sounds good, and hopefully, you know, Hopefully this is not the last time we play y'all for a while on Friday night. So, you know, very, very much looking forward to this happening again, watching LSU and A&M on the field once again. So, with that, we will close it out. And for our guys at A&M, what was the name of y'all blog again?
IamTheTwelfthMan.com.
Gotcha. Okay. Y'all, be sure LSU fans are listening to this. Be sure to check that out as well. Looking for some A&M knowledge. And as always, continue to follow Annabelle Chick all week for some pertinent information from everybody on our end. You will hear this show, I guess, just probably either tomorrow or Thursday. We have a podcast that decides to get off his little hind end and edit it and put it together and put it out. It'll definitely be out before Friday night. So look forward then. And for Patrick and for our guys at A&M, for podcast pushing the buttons behind the scenes, this is Kerry Muntz. This has been the Go Show. Looking forward to the Cotton Bowl on Friday night in Jerry's World. And as always, go Tigers.